Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films, The Last Voyage of the Demeter, Jewels, Heart of Stone, Only Murders in the Building, Season 3, and a wrap-up of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, Season 2. I'm also going to be talking about some news, The Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup, featuring a look back at Sorcerer. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, yes, I'm still calling it Twitter. I will never call it X. It will never not be Twitter for me. But if you want to reach out to me on Twitter for as long as it lasts, I'm at Kevin Carr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
First off, let's look at the box office. Barbie held very well in its third week with $53 million. The Meg 2, The Trench, came in second. It managed to come in second with $30 million, just barely squeaked ahead of Oppenheimer in its third week. And that, what's funny about The Meg, you look at how people are reporting box office, The Meg's budget is about what Haunted Mansions was, maybe a little bit less. And The Meg made about what the Haunted Mansion made its first weekend. And a lot of people are looking at the Haunted Mansion as a failure and The Meg as a huge hit. It's not about the American box office on this. Part of it is also the Haunted Mansion has dropped considerably. In its sophomore week, it dropped 62% to $9 million, which is not good. It's not going to hold well. What's making Meg 2 such a big hit is the international numbers. It was financed by a Chinese company. It was starring known Chinese actors, nobody that anyone knows really in the States, but in China, they're well known. So it was made for an international audience. And you saw this with movies like Warcraft, which was a flop in America, but made 10 times as much as it did in America overseas. So you got to remember, the marketplace is global when it comes to this. And then Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles came in fourth with $28 million. A lot of people are like, oh, fourth, it lost to The Meg. Well, part of the thing you got to realize is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles opened on Wednesday, which means it really opened on Tuesday. And when it opened on Tuesday, it did early screenings. So The Meg in that $30 million, it got all of its opening day on Friday, plus all the Thursday night previews. And I started doing previews for that movie at like 5 in the evening. Whereas Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was just doing the pure Friday. So that's actually a really good run for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, especially when you consider it was a lower budget movie. I think it was like $70 million. And that's, I think, one of the biggest takeaways on this weekend is we need to stop spending $300 million on movies. You know, the movies like Indiana Jones or Mission Impossible or Fast and Furious, when you're spending $300 million, you have to make $1 billion to break even. It blows my mind that there are movies over $500 million and they're like, oh, it may not be profitable. I'm like, well, that's an accounting problem on your end. So it was a big weekend last week. It's simply because you had the Barbenheimer effect plus two movies that at least had a big enough box office to get like four movies over $25 million, which hasn't happened in a while. The next piece of news is a sad piece of news. William Friedkin, director, has passed away. Most people know him for The Exorcist. That's what he's best known for. And that's a fantastic movie. But he also did stuff like The French Connection, and he did Sorcerer. I'll be talking about Sorcerer later in the show. Wanted to actually review that. It was a blind spot in my filmography, so I actually hadn't seen it. So I was curious about checking that out. But yes, William Friedkin, he was a problematic director. He had ups and downs with the studios and with his actors. He was not always the easiest to work with. There's plenty of stories, some of them from him, about what a problem he was on set. I mean, Ellen Burstyn hated him. He almost injured her on the set. And the story about how he ended up with Tubular Bells as the music for The Exorcist is pretty hilarious. I mean, he was 87, so he'd been around for a while, and he was still like making some noise out there on Twitter and pointing stuff out. And he had a little bit of a comeback when he did the movie Killer Joe a dozen or so years ago. So he has an interesting career that's worth looking into. So yes, he will be missed as a director. The final thing I want to point out is the AMPTP, which is the guild that represents the studios, met with the WGA, and that thing collapsed before it even started because they couldn't even get to a point. It wasn't even negotiating. It was about how to negotiate. They couldn't even agree about what they would negotiate about, so it collapsed. And so I mean, they ended up hitting 100 days of the strike midweek, and the scuttlebutt is that there's some news of the AMPTP reaching out to the negotiating committee for the WGA, but I still think there's a long time. What they want to do is the producers want to not fight a two-front war. They don't want two strikes going on at the same time. But here's the problem. The WGA wants to allow its members to continue to strike until any associated guilds are done with their own strikes. So they have the most power if the WGA and SAG-AFTRA are striking at the same time. And once the logjam breaks for a WGA contract, they can put more pressure on SAG. But this whole thing's going on, and both of them happening at the same time is devastating to the industry. And a lot of people said, well, why didn't they just give in? Part of it with the AMPTP, I think what they're trying to do, whenever you have a strike like this, you don't capitulate immediately because then it would just invite more strikes. It's in the AMPTP's best interest to drag this out at least a bit so that guilds aren't going to be ready to strike right away. That's part of their strategy, not just to starve people out, which they've said, and that's gotten a lot of bad press for them. But the strategy on something like this is if you give in right away, it's like a negotiation. If you're going to be selling a car on Angie's List or something, and somebody counters your offer and you're like, deal, well, you agreed too quickly and you probably gave up too much of your negotiating room. So I still think this thing's going to drag on for months. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is, looks like a horror comedy. It comes out at the end of the month in August, and that is Slaughterhouse.
So cute. What is that?
That's a sloth. If you're interested, I could sell you that one.
They're really that slow?
Maybe they just tricked us all.
In the jungle, she's a beta. But out here, she's an alpha.
Alpha? It is a wild animal. You don't even know what it eats. Alpha?
It's a Slaughterhouse.
Oh, God.
Yes, a killer sloth, which honestly I think is kind of a hilarious idea. I'm all for Slaughterhouse. I'm 100% there. It looks stupid, but you know, when has some horror movies never been stupid? I mean, it looks like it might be a lot of fun. So I might actually try and check this out. I just don't know if they'll send me a screener of it. So the next one I want to talk about is The Continental, which is coming to Peacock on September 22nd.
You made a big mistake coming here.
You're my brother, Frankie.
We have to strike first. And I need all the help I can get.
If we're gonna take on the Continental, every freak in that hotel will be after us.
We need guns. Lots of guns.
This is the John Wick prequel series, and it's about the hotel, the Continental, in the 70s. Mel Gibson's in the trailer as the bad guy, which can be polarizing for some people. I know there's some people who are like, yep, nope, I'm not going to watch anything with Mel Gibson in it anymore. But my biggest issue is part of what makes John Wick work is John Wick. I mean, you need Keanu Reeves and his reluctant hero character, the person who's dragged back into this, and all he just wants to do is live a quiet life, and they keep dragging him back in. They keep going after him, and he still has to keep killing more people. So John Wick is the key to the John Wick movies, and unless you have John Wick showing up as a five-year-old, it's not going to work in this. So that's my big reservation about this. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Jules and Heart of Stone.
Hey,
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump right into the movie reviews and talk about, it's a smaller one that's coming out this week. It's going to be fighting sharks and Barbies and turtles for screens, and Dracula too. But this is Jules. A lonely widower in small town Pennsylvania forms an unlikely friendship with a quiet alien who crash lands in his flower bed.
A UFO has crashed in my backyard, has taken out my azaleas, and destroyed my bird bath.
When you talk like that, it makes them all take us less seriously.
Did you just say UFO?
This is the little man who came out of it.
He's gotta be a secret. Don't tell anybody.
You think we can call him Jules?
He's no Jules. He's more of a Gary.
Your dad was in here earlier. He said he was buying apples for an alien.
Like an illegal alien?
This, I like to describe this as, and I'll say it again at some point, a geriatric version of E.T. It's about a guy played by Ben Kingsley who does a great job. And one of the things I love about Ben Kingsley's career is he's won an Oscar. You know, he was in Gandhi and he was in Schindler's List. He's been in some huge movies, but he's also been in some real crap too. I mean, he was in, like, what, Species? And God bless him if he doesn't throw down for Species. I mean, he's an Oscar winner, and it's the cheesiest movie, and he just leans into it. I love that. And Anthony Hopkins is kind of the same way. He's been in a bunch of just terrible films that he's kind of just having some fun with. But Ben Kingsley, this just gives him a little more of acting, and what I like about it, it doesn't always have to be a huge movie. He's in this small little film, very intimate. And it's got a lot of sweetness to it. It's not just Kingsley who's in it. There's a couple other recognized, probably the most recognizable actor in it is Jane Curtin. She's one of the other people in town, one of the elderly people in town who finds out about Jules. They name the alien Jules. And she finds out about Jules, and it's just them trying to keep him secret. But it's very low key. It's a sci-fi movie, but it's not an overt sci-fi action movie. And the character that Ben Kingsley plays has his own grounding in reality. If you know anybody, especially somebody who's in their late 70s and widowed, whether it's a man or a woman, this is a tough time for a lot of people. They tend to get very lonely. I'll tell you, my mother faced similar things a couple of years ago. My father passed away about 3 years ago. And then their remaining dog, she had to have put down because he was getting old. And for this chunk of time, she was just alone. And you lose yourself at that point. You know, if you're not working and you're in your late 70s, you've been retired, and the one person who you spent that time with is now gone, it's very, very empty and lonely in the house. And I remember dealing with my mom during that point, and we made some changes in our lives, and things are different now for her. But that's a real challenge, and that's a real sad time for some older people. And I can appreciate that. I mean, I think that Ben Kingsley does a good job making it real. And he does a great job grounding it. And the movie itself, like I said, it's not sensationalized. I don't even think you don't see the crash. You just hear it and he goes outside and the alien ship is pretty low key. I mean, it's not a, you know, Transformers movie or anything like that. And a lot of it is Ben Kingsley alone with his alien in his house and talking to it. And the alien is very, very low key, doesn't talk, and it just kind of looks. So all that acting is being hefted by Kingsley, and he does a fantastic job in it. And this movie really has a lot of heart. I mean, I enjoyed it. I thought it was sweet. It's made by the people who did Little Miss Sunshine. So it has that feel to it where it gets into the interpersonal relationships, and that's kind of what makes the movie work. So yeah, this is low-key and sweet. This geriatric version of E.T. has a fair amount of heart. I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Heart of Stone. Gal Gadot plays an international operative who tries to stop the takeover of a computer system that can control the world.
The most highly trained agents.
No political leanings. No national allegiances.
Working together to keep peace in a turbulent world.
The heart is what gives the charter its power.
We can crash a market or drop a plane out of the sky.
If you own the heart, you own the world.
What's happening?
Our systems are offline.
We've lost the heart.
And now you answer to me.
This is the latest Netflix big action movie where they take a star and spin them off. You know, like, for example, Extraction was Netflix taking one of the Avengers and spinning it off into his own action franchise. And he's done two movies now. She's the big star in this. There's other recognizable names and faces to it. Like Jamie Dornan plays one of the people on her team, and Glenn Close has a small part as one of the leaders of this organization. But it's basically Gadot's role. What's funny is she's making more news this weekend about claiming that James Gunn and Peter Safran promised her that she would continue to play Wonder Woman. And I don't know, this might be just a symptom of overreporting. I don't necessarily blame her. I think somebody asked her about it and she answered the question, and now that's getting reported, and that's overshadowing everything now. But she's fine in the movie. I don't have an issue with her. And I'm all for giving her her own action franchise. In fact, it was funny, when she was first cast as Wonder Woman, I was one of the people who I was like, this model from the Fast and Furious movies. But I thought she completely stepped up to it, and I'm now a fan of her doing the action stuff. And she's certainly trying to beef up her acting ability and her presence on screen. So I'm all for that. But the problem with this movie, there's a lot of problems. It's just an amalgamation of cliches from all these other action movies. First of all, can we stop it with the computers that are so powerful they can control the world? They can hack into any system. They can control any, make planes fall from the sky. I'm so tired of that role. Not only have we seen that role a lot, we've seen that role this summer. Wasn't that the whole point of Dead Reckoning, the Mission Impossible movie? And wasn't that also the point of one of the Fast and Furious? Are we still on that quantum computer that can control the world? I'm so tired of that. It's such a cliche. It's so overdone. And how do you combat something like that? So, yeah, I'm over that. But the other part of this movie is they load in all these action sequences that are overblown, and there's almost so much flash in the spectacle, it's like they're trying to hide something. Even with them using the computer, they're not behind a keyboard. They have this guy doing this like virtual thing and the 3D modeling all over the place, and it's overblown. Then when you strip that away, you're like, well, there's not much of a story here. It rips off everything from Fast and Furious to Mission Impossible. I mean, there's nothing original in the movie. Every single thing is either telegraphed and obvious that it's going to happen, or there's something that's not surprising because it's such a cliche. You expect to see it in movies all over the place. And the other thing is in the spectacle, like there's this one whole sequence that's on sort of this dirigible, this blimp type vehicle. And I mean, I've seen action sequences on blips. You saw that in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, and Rocketeer has a really great sequence on a blimp. But this one is overproduced. Again, it doesn't look good. It looks very CGI. And I would just rather watch a good old-fashioned authentic action sequence rather than something that's so overproduced and overblown. A paint-by-numbers plot and action collapses under the uninspired writing, painful cliches, and overproduced spectacle. Unfortunately, Heart of Stone, sorry, gal, kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about The Last Voyage of the Demeter and Only Murders in the Building Season 3. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about The Last Voyage of the Demeter. The crew of a ship traveling from Romania to London discover they have a terrifying stowaway.
The Demeter, on charter from Romania to London. Shipping private crates out at sea with no land in sight.
Something ripped apart the animals.
All the livestock?
This looks like a bite.
Search the ship everywhere.
In the night, it drinks our blood. He is here. We call him Dracula.
I'm a huge horror movie fan. But being a huge horror movie fan means I'm also very critical of horror movies. Because I don't want to see a bad horror movie. I'm not talking about a bad horror movie that ends up being a brilliant film that's just fun to watch, like Halloween 3. I'm talking about just bad horror movies. I don't think this one's going to age well. This is not one that people are going to look back on and say, oh, this was actually brilliant. I read Dracula, and let's face it, not a whole lot of people have, but I read Dracula. It's been a while, but I read Dracula when I was in college. It's not my favorite book of the famous monster books. You know, I like Frankenstein much better. I like the Invisible Man. Dracula is a little bit of a slag to get through. And then the reason it is because it's told in third-party writings, these journal entries and stuff like that. And there's a whole section in there about this ship. Now, it's glossed over in the movies. Like in the original Dracula, Todd Browning's movie, Bela Lugosi's not in these scenes, but you see the ship coming to the shore, and it's actually the shot from another movie. And then they go on the ship, and they find it's a ghost ship. They open the cargo hold, and there's Renfield, played by the brilliant Dwight Fry. And that's about it. That's all you get in a movie. But there is a whole section in the book about this, and I'm like, that's a brilliant idea. I think it's great to do this. You can really mine some great stuff. But because it's such an obscure thing, there should have been some mystery to it. It should have been a second act reveal that it was Dracula. But no, Dracula's on the poster, Dracula's in the trailers. They say Dracula in the first 30 seconds of the movie. They say it's from Bram Stoker's Dracula. So when mysterious stuff starts happening on the freighter, you're like, it's a vampire. It's Dracula. It's a vampire. We all know it's a vampire. You can't even go in cold to this movie and not know it's... And then it's also told in flashback because it begins with the ship crashed in England. It just takes any sort of mystery or any sort of suspense out of it. And speaking of suspense, you could really draw this out. You could have really had some creepy moments where Dracula is sneaking into people's bunks and draining them and that kind of thing, but slowly doing it and really build. But no, every single moment Dracula's there, he's like, rah! And there's a huge crashing sound and it's a jump scare. And that's fine once or twice, but every single time Dracula doesn't, there's no suspense whatsoever in this movie. On top of it, it's shot with this modern cinematography where they don't light things. And I've railed against this for months, where they don't light properly and they put lights behind people. There's literally a scene where there's a guy talking and he's in front of a window. You can't see his face. It's just a silhouette. I'm like, oh God, I've seen that in a dozen movies this year. And it's not creative. And it makes it hard to watch. And then on top of it, you know, that sort of the dark, underlit, low contrast cinematography is bad enough when it's a movie that takes place in an open field. But this is a Dracula movie. So a lot of it takes place at night or in the bowels of the ship where it's dark and dingy and dirty and underlit. And this is a danger. And I don't think studios and cinematographers don't realize people are not watching these in ideal environments. They're going to the theaters. And look, this is a reality. Theaters are running their bulbs low. It is very expensive to replace a projector bulb. It's like thousands of dollars. And theaters are hemorrhaging right now. They're so relieved that Barbie and Oppenheimer are doing well because that's really the one highlight of the summer. There's not any huge juggernauts aside from that. But you can't survive an entire year on a single juggernaut film. So movie theaters are hemorrhaging now. And so they're running their bulbs low. So you get a dimly lit projection. And as a result of that, this thing is almost impossible to watch. I can't see what was going on screen. I remember I complained about this with The Pope's Exorcist several months ago. You couldn't see anything that was going on. And then I saw it on a 4K version. And I'm like, oh, well, now that looks actually really better. I mean, it's still dark, but it, at least on a properly calibrated television, it looks discernible. But a lot of theaters aren't doing that. And that's why people aren't going, because they're like, it's too dark. I'll wait till I get home. There's so much potential in this, and it squanders it all. I mean, it's a great idea with few surprises and a muddled plot and murky cinematography. And that means The Last Voyage of the Demeter sucks. No pun intended.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about, it's not a movie, but it's a TV series on Hulu. Only Murders in the Building, Season 3. Our three podcasting detectives are back to solve a murder of a movie star in their new play.
It's opening night, and a big star drops dead on stage.
Oh my God, my leading man is dead.
Is this really happening?
Well, you know, who are we without a homicide?
NYPD! The killer is someone in this room.
My show is hanging on by a thread here.
Finding this killer is the only way you'll have a show.
Want to make a podcast with me?
Oh my God, this is corny.
So corny.
I know it is. Yeah. Murder?
Yeah, murder. Yeah.
Only Murders in the Building was one of these gems of the pandemic. There were a bunch of stuff that showed up on streaming that was a bright light, and it gave us some hope. And, you know, stuff like Ted Lasso, even Tiger King to a degree. And there are a bunch of like smaller movies like the Vast of Night, these smaller films that I thought these were bright spots. And Only Murders in the Building was one of them. My family started watching that and we really enjoyed it. They've done two seasons and now they've dropped the third season. I think just two episodes are out right now. And one of the things that's so fascinating about it is it's not a surprise to see Steve Martin and Martin Short working together, but throwing Selena Gomez and you kind of have to sit there and go, wait, what? How did the three of them get together? What sort of speed dating bingo card did they all end up on? But the three of them work really well together. There's great chemistry and they're keeping it going. Now, part of what makes Only Murders in the Building sort of kitschy is they have these guest stars. You know, they had Sting in there. They had Amy Schumer. Thank God she was only in one episode or two. I don't like Amy Schumer. But in this one, they've got some new guest stars. You've got Paul Rudd playing the victim. Not just playing the, he's playing, literally playing the victim. You've got Meryl Streep as one of the actors this year. And they shake it up. So it's not this external murder investigation that they're interfering with, which is kind of what happened in the first two seasons. And even though they get to that point where you got an active murder investigation that is irritated with them, so to speak, it's really more about giving each of the characters some time to flesh out their roles. And I mean, everybody's had a character moments that they could develop in previous seasons, but this one, they kind of go even farther off the beaten path. They really give Martin Short is trying to do this play. And of course there's maybe a little bit of a romance going on and he really kind of builds his own. So it's not just like thrown in. Like last season, the relationship with his son was kind of felt thrown in. And you've got more of Andrea Martin in there, and I think she's hilarious. I'm a huge fan. After watching her in this and in Evil, I'm a huge fan again. And Selena Gomez, she kind of takes a bit of a backseat to this one. It gets a little bit more of a regular story, whereas like the last season, well, she was so integral to the mystery in the first season. And in the last season, it was exploring her character, where she's a little more supporting in this one. But the chemistry's back. It's all good. And I welcome watching this. Again, now I'm not finished with the series. I'm only about six episodes in. And so far, so good. I really enjoy it. It's not about as much about the murder in this season and less about the investigation and the podcast. And it's just giving the characters a little bit of time to explore. So, I mean, it still has its charm and chemistry, but this season allowed the actors a more tailored role in their characters' journeys. I'm going to say that the new season of Only Murders in the Building totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to wrap up the season of Strange New Worlds and do the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Sorcerer. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the new reviews, and I'm going to be talking about Star Trek Strange New Worlds. And I know I talked about it several weeks ago when the season premiered, but I'd only been given like about half the episodes to watch. And I think it's important to go back and talk about this because there's some interesting stuff going on in this development of this series that's different than what we saw in Picard or Star Trek Discovery. So in the season two of the newest Star Trek show features a Lower Decks crossover and a musical episode.
I sense a tension, a feeling that something's in the air.
My God.
Our job puts us up against death. We might not like it, but we do have to face it.
Hold on to your saddles.
Surprise!
live long and prosper, Mr. Wendler.
You also live and...
I am a huge fan of Lower Decks. If you don't know what that is, it's sort of that adult animation style. I mean, it's not like crass, like Family Guy, but it's a little, it's made for jokes for, you know, grown-ups. It's not a kids animated series. But it's basically about these people who work in the lower decks of this minor ship in the fleet. And it's very, very funny. I really do enjoy it. They've got a new season of that coming up. Well, one of the things with Strange New Worlds, they announced, I remember last year, they said they're going to do a crossover between Lower Decks and Strange New Worlds. And so what they did is they dropped that into this season. First of all, that episode itself, I know it was polarizing. I've heard some people say, well, it was too goofy and silly. But I'm like, look, Star Trek has always had its moments of goofy and silliness. I mean, The Trouble with Tribbles, one of the most popular episodes ever, is nothing but a fun, silly episode. It's not dark. It involves the Klingons, and it involves war, but it's silly, and it's fun. And there's a humor to a lot of it. And that's one of the things when they did the first Star Trek movie back in 1979, that was so serious, they said that didn't have the humor. It didn't have the lilt that Star Trek had. And sometimes you overcompensate, like they did with the fifth movie. But I think it was completely appropriate to have a fun episode. And it was neat that they took the actual actors who portrayed two of the characters in Lower Decks and brought them into the Star Trek universe, because they marginally look like their designs. And I thought that was fun. It pulled into canon, and it actually drops in some things that explain things. And one of my biggest complaints, and it's been a complaint this season, I know this is a bone of contention with some people, is the character of Christine Chapel. And they developed this relationship between Christine Chapel and Spock. And the whole point is that at some point, Spock has to become Spock of the original series. And he's so much not like that. And him having a romantic relationship with Christine Chapel is not played out. In the original series, Christine Chapel obviously has a thing for him, but he does not reciprocate. I'm getting a little bit of relief that they're finally at least setting the stage for them to have a split of some sort that puts Spock into ultra logic mode, which is what he was in the original series. Now, I don't think they're going to explain the fact that Christine Chapel is this sort of mousy nerd in the original series, where she's totally not in this one. But I can survive that. The other thing that was kind of a polarizing episode was the musical episode. And I'm not a big fan of just doing a musical episode just to do a musical episode. My problem with in musicals in particular is, you know, they have this story going on and then they say, okay, we're going to pause for about 5 to 10 minutes and do a big number. And I'm like, can't we just continue with the story? I find musical theater in a lot of times, like an old show, even something like a classic, like Carousel, it just has these divergent numbers that don't actually characterize anybody. They're just there to have a show number. And that's what Glee turned into, just a jukebox musical. If you watch the first couple episodes of Glee, those songs that they do actually help the character flow. This musical episode, I thought, really worked because it fit within the explanation of what was going on. You can do anything. It's a Star Trek series. They're literally encountering things that do strange stuff. And I thought it was fun. It was lighthearted. It again plays into some of the explanations of how this will lead into the original series. And they just have some very fun elements. Now, of course, it comes crashing in tone into the season finale, which is a very dark, heavy, militaristic, we're being attacked by the Gorn story. But you get that in Star Trek. So for all the people out there who are saying, well, the musical episode and the Lower Decks crossover was out of the realm of Star Trek, I mean, no, it wasn't. They did genre crossovers all the time. Even going back to the original series, they had gangster episodes and old Roman episodes and westerns. I mean, they cross pollinated the genres all the time. So I was not a problem with that. I like the episodic nature of Strange New Worlds, that you can have these one-off episodes and it's not a continual arc, which is what you had with Picard. So I really think they've done a really good job building out Strange New Worlds this season. So I'm going to have to say this season definitely did rock.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on Sorcerer, and I've never seen Sorcerer. The Sorcerer was one that just kind of fell into my blind spot, so I figured this is as good a time as any to take a look at this, because I know it wasn't reviewed well when it first came out, but it has become a well-respected film. So William Friedkin directs this thriller about four men on the run who take on a dangerous challenge in South America.
Suspense, adventure, mystery, danger, courage. Sorcerer. Roy Scheider in a new film by William Friedkin. Sorcerer, rated PG. Starts Friday at a theater near you.
One of the most misleading things about this is the name. It's not mystical or magical. It's a down-to-earth, real-life movie. And that played into why it didn't do well. He was coming off The Exorcist, and The Exorcist was about evil and Satan and spiritual elements. And then you name the next movie Sorcerer, and it's not about a sorcerer. Now, I mean, you can look at Sorcerer and say, well, it's people in purgatory or trying to escape hell, which is essentially what's going on. And there's certainly a scene near the end where you really feel like he's traveling through the wastelands to try, Roy Scheider, is traveling through the wastelands to try and make that final journey out of the pit and out of the abyss. But it's a grounded movie of real life. But it's a real slow burn. I mean, it reminds me a lot of early Friedkin, especially like if you look at the beginning of The Exorcist is more a sequence of vignettes, these little vignettes of things that are happening. You don't know how they're connected. And like, especially the early parts of the dig in The Exorcist, it opens up with them digging in Iraq somewhere, or what would be Iraq. I don't know if it was called Iraq then, but they don't have a narrator. They don't have any dialogue that explains it. They just have him showing up and finding this statue of Pazuzu. And that's what this feels like. It feels like it's these little sections that, you know, eventually are going to come together and make sense, but they haven't yet. This is the kind of movie you would only get in the 70s. You couldn't even have made this movie in the 50s, not just special effects wise, but it was not the kind of narrative you had. It's a very 70s narrative. In the 70s, people would go to the movies and you could wait a half hour or 45 minutes to actually see where everything gels together and happens in film. Now they're just like, no, we got to have an explosive action sequence at the beginning. And this just drops you in and you have to figure out where you are. And you don't even know what the movie's about until like halfway through. And that's kind of weirdly refreshing to watch now. And it can be frustrating if you aren't expecting it. Now, like, obviously I was going to sit through this movie, but I could see people, you know, back in the day of running into this on TV and, you know, getting bored and leaving. I was kind of drawn in by the characters and their place. Plus, when they're finally, the whole thing is they have to drive these trucks filled with dynamite that's leaking 200 miles across the South American jungle. And like, there's this famous scene of them trying to get across this rope bridge, this Indiana Jones bridge with these massive trucks. I mean, it looks amazing. You really see the work put into this and the suspense works amazing in this. It's really a quality film, and not a whole lot of people have seen it in terms of the mainstream. I say, go check it out. It's not on any streaming service. You're going to have to pay $3 to rent it. You can spend $3 on iTunes or Prime or Vudu or something like that. But it's a slow burn suspense film about the length some will go through to escape hell. I'm going to say that Sorcerer totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
And that's it for the week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about The Blue Beetle and Strays. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.